Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Trigger Talk. On this, April 10th. It sure seems like a nice day today outside. It's been nice all week, and we're going to get some more rain. We need the rain. April showers bring May flowers, they say, right? Isn't that the way it goes? So while if we do get rain, there are some things you can do. Now, this would take a little driving, but there's a gun show in Bark River, at the Bark River Senior Center. Now, Bark River, anybody know where Bark River is? Bark River, I had to look that up. It's about 20 miles west of Escanaba, halfway between there and the Wisconsin line. And it's the Bark River Senior Center. So I'm thinking of a bunch of old youpers up there wearing their Stormy Cromer hats, all sitting around looking at guns. So that would be worth going to for, but that's just yesterday and today. So you'd have to get, well, I don't even think you could make it there in time today. Let's see. We've got April 10th is the biggest little gun show in Hesperia. Now, I should have looked up Hesperia. Where is Hesperia? But it's only today, and it's at the Hesperia Lodge, number 411. And then the Misaki Conservation Club gun show is also today only at the Misaki Conservation Club at Lake City, Michigan. I'm going to have to look up during the break and see where Hesperia is. So let's see. We also have, they canceled it for today, the Port Huron Gun and Knife Show at the Blue Water Convention Center. And let's see. Actually, April 10th and 11th, today and tomorrow, is the at St. Ignace, up way up north at Keewaydin Casino in St. Ignace, Michigan, is the St. Ignace Gun Show. And tomorrow, gosh, we're in this great, we are really into gun shows here. April 11th, the Big Bear Sportsman's Club Gun Show at the Veterans of Foreign Wars in Kaliva, Michigan. So I guess maybe they haven't heard that Gretchen Whitmer wants us to voluntarily not go indoors on things. So let's see. Ohio, the Dayton Gun Show, the Massillon Gun Show, and the Wooster Gun Show. So we got three in Ohio. We've got one in Missouri, the Hallsville Fairgrounds at Hallsville, Missouri. And I had to look up this, the Babylon Gun Show. This is in New York. Okay, Mike, out in Long Island, the Babylon Gun Show at the American Legion Hall in Babylon, New York, which is right in the center of Long Island. So I think you could head out to that one. But if you head out now, leave your radio on or your smart radio so that your smartphone so you can listen and stream Wham Radio here. Let's see. Our numbers are still at 735,554 CPLs. And I'm going to talk about CPLs and actually constitutional carry in a little bit. But first I want to talk about, here's something that starts up tomorrow. And this is out at Tri-County Sportsman's League. And this is a fun event. They do it, actually it's going to be the second weekend of every month through September. So it's like April 11th, May 9th, June 6th, I guess that's the first weekend, June 11th, August 8th, and September 19th is the handgun bowling pin shoot. And they kind of alternate those with handguns and also pistol caliber carbines. What they do is they have a bunch of, like, they look like bookshelves, okay? And they have five bowling pins across them. And what you do is you shoot against time. So they have a timer and it goes beep, and then you have to shoot down your five bowling pins, and then it records the last shot. And so let's say it took you 5.6 seconds, and then the next guy it took 7 seconds, and then the next guy did it in 4 seconds, and oh man, it's a race against, you know, competition against other people in not head-on shooting, although usually there's two people at a time, but you're separated. But the thing is that you're racing against yourself for your best time and stuff like that. So bragging rights are determined by the lowest shooter score or time. And by the way, this is important. If you don't own a handgun, a pistol caliber carbine, or a .22 rifle, now you can also use .22 rifles in this, but there are usually, and there's a bunch of people that that are the regulars at this. There's Mike Cowie and Jim Walter and guys like that who are more than happy to say, hey, well, you want to try, but you know, just stop on by, okay? This is starting tomorrow, Sunday at 11:30 a.m. until 5. The shooting starts at 12, okay? And what it is the cost for each relay, let's say, is $5, and that is four different tables or 20 pins that you shoot in order. So the thing that's cool is that it doesn't cost much. And if you don't have a gun, Jim or Mike or one of the guys will usually say, well, yeah, hey, come on out. Yeah, you can shoot. I've got my 22 here. You can, or might even be a pistol caliber carbine or something, and you can shoot. So let me give you a name, Mike Cowie, C-O-W-H-Y, and his phone number is 313-530-7789. And you can get a hold of Mike. Also, he's got a email, car64mc at, believe it or not, this is an old one, peoplepc.com. peoplepc.com. So you can get a hold of Mike and do that. Let's see. We had a question last week from a listener who was wondering about a machine gun or a full auto bolt carrier in a semi-auto, in an AR-15. So a lot of times what you hear is that people will have an M16 bolt. Okay. Now, the thing is that there is very little difference between an M16 bolt, which is a full auto, quote, machine gun bolt. I hate to say that, but a full auto bolt, bolt carrier versus a semi-automatic bolt carrier. And the difference is actually, I want to say, the bottom of the bolt carrier has an area that's machined out on the AR-15 bolt that is still there on the M16 bolt. It has nothing to do on an AR-15 with making it fully auto or anything like that. But it does actually, on an AR-15, it lowers the mass of the bolt. And there's some discussion going around about, if you use the M16 bolt or the full auto bolt, that the mass, it slows down the cyclic rate of the gun a little bit and makes it more reliable. I don't know. I have AR-15s. And as actually Theron mentioned this week, I called in when, and we'll get to this, the 800-pound gorilla in the room, or the 80-pound president in the room, Joe Biden, came out with all of his suggestions for executive actions this week. And I called into Theron's show and was talking to him, and he brought up that I had previously owned and he had shot with me. Actually, he's got a video of it. I have to see if I could find that again. It was a lot of years ago, but we were shooting an AR-15 with a bump stock, and it had an AR-15 bolt. But it was fully reliable from the standpoint of action and stuff like that. So I had called in and talked to Theron on his show about the various Joe Biden things, and he brought up the bump stock issue, which, by the way, has a new ruling. There was actually a judge that declared that the executive action and the action that the ATF took declaring bump stocks illegal was in fact illegal itself for them doing that. So that's going to still be out there to be adjudicated. But at any rate, the point was, is that when we shot an AR-15 in a full auto mode, similar to full auto with a bump stock. It was perfectly reliable from that standpoint. Now, what it wasn't reliable with was I had some Tula or Wolf ammo that got stuck in the chamber with the lacquer on it because it heated up so much. But that's another story, and we'll talk about that in a little bit too, because I was going to talk about stinky and unusual Russian ammo, hopefully a little later if we get to it today. So at any rate, the question came up about a guy who was wanting to put a full ammo or a full auto bolt carrier in his AR-15 that he was building. But the concern was not whether it would work or not, but whether or not the ATF would consider that to be an NFA or fully auto part in there, and then it would require a tax stamp. And I've got to tell you, the ruling on that is that the bolt carrier itself is not the full auto part. The full auto part is the auto sear, and that's part of the trigger group, and it has actually another hole that's machined in it and stuff like that. So you're fine using that full auto bolt carrier in your AR-15 build. Let's see. Oh, here we are talking about lacquer-coated ammo. And one of the reasons I was looking this up, first of all, the ammo situation is terrible right now. We've talked about that in the past. You can't find ammo. You might find some and it's more expensive, but at least you can still get it. But sometimes it's not what you're looking for. And there's a company called Barnaul, B-A-R-N-A-U-L, that is one of the ammo companies from Russia. They make a lot of ammo, and there's other ones called Wolf and Tula and different brands out there, Golden Tiger, Golden Bear, different things like that. They're all Russian ammo, and they're steel-cased ammo. And there's pretty much two types of it. One type is that it has a steel case, and it has like a greenish-colored lacquer on it. And that lacquer, which is a sealant and to prevent it from corroding and stuff like that, can actually melt. And if you're shooting a lot, because I've seen guys in as little as one magazine full heat up a chamber and they get these rounds stuck in them. For one thing is what they're designed for is Russian chambers, okay? 7.62 by 39 Russian chambers, okay, which are loose compared to if you have a nicely made AR-15 or one with match components in it and stuff, you have tight chambers, and that's what you want for accuracy. But if you're going to have cheap ammo in it that lacquer is going to heat up and melt and start to stick in the chamber, then you're going to have failure to extract, okay? But the question that I was interested in is, and now tell me if you guys are out shooting, you've smelled this before. You're shooting at the range and everybody's shooting away and they're shooting, you know, CCI and they're shooting Federal and they're shooting Winchester ammo and everything like that. And all of a sudden you go, holy cow. Now, I don't know. I guess I can probably say this on the radio, but they said it smells like, I guess I'll say the proper term for it, cat urine, okay? The smoke from this Russian ammo smells like, I was going to say cat pee, and, you know, but cat urine, okay, which is a terrible smell. And the thing is that it has this unusual smell, and a lot of times it's dirtier. It's smokier and stuff. Well, I was reading an article. I was trying to figure out why the Russian ammo has that cat pee smell, okay? And it's because Russian powder has a lot of flash suppressant in it. I didn't know that. So when you smell that nasty smelling ammo at the range, that is undoubtedly Russian ammo, and it's because that they have a lot of flash suppressant in it, and it has that odd smell and black soot that's common with Wolf and Tula and Tiger and Golden Tiger and Golden Bear and all those oddball ones. So at any rate, let's see. This is one of the stories that was big this week. Tennessee, don't worry, we're going to get to Joe Biden. Tennessee joins the growing constitutional carry club. And what they just did, Tennessee just signed a bill that makes the governor, Bill Lee, signed a bill making the volunteer state, they call it Tennessee Volunteers, the 20th state to allow responsible citizens to carry firearms without a government permission slip. So that's now 20 out of 50 that are constitutional carry states. We should have been here in Michigan if our legislature had been doing what they should have been when they had both sides and the governor. But there's always some reason. It's like, you can't vote on that. It's the 13th and a half anniversary of the Parkland shooting. I mean, there's always something, right? It's not just like a 5-year or a 10-year or a 20-year anniversary of Columbine. It's the 11 and a half anniversary. It's too soon to talk about these things. But they became the fourth state this year alone to sign constitutional carry into law. So that's really good. And I actually found what I think is a very neat graphic. Now, I know this doesn't work very well on the radio. You can look into your car speakers. It's real close. You might be able to see it. But it is a graphic of the United States. And the actual graphic is a motion graphic that transitions. Starts in 1986. With right to carry, and it goes 87, 88, 89, 90, up through 2021. And each year, the colors of the states change, okay? And back in 1987, a whole lot of states were no issue at all. There's Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Missouri, Arkansas, that's Mississippi. All of those states were no issue for concealed carry permit. Not even a may issue, which is, well, we may if we feel like it, okay, which is what California, Nevada, and Idaho, and Montana, and all those kinds of states were all may issues. There was one unrestricted state in 1987, Vermont, okay? And all the rest of them were either, there was 9 shall issue states, which is what we are now, 24 may issue states, and 16 no issue states. Well, now you fast forward to right to carry in 2021, okay? And the graphic is kind of cool because you get to watch it transition over the years. If I can't put that graphic up on my website, I'm going to at least put the first one and the last one up, because it now shows that 20 states are unrestricted. Okay, Idaho, Montana, Colorado, North and South Dakota, Iowa, Missouri, Utah, Arizona. Let's see, what do we got here? Oklahoma, Arkansas, Mississippi, Tennessee, Kentucky, West Virginia, and Maine and Vermont, New Hampshire. All of those are unrestricted states now. If you are a law-abiding citizen, you can carry a gun with no CPL or no permit, no permission slip whatsoever. Now, 22 states are shall issue. That's what we are now, which says they must issue you the license unless there's a reason that they shouldn't, like you're a felon or a sex offender or a wife batterer, something like that, okay? And then eight states are still may issue, California, New York, and a whole bunch of them all around, you know, Baltimore and Washington, D.C. and Maryland and Connecticut and all those things, okay? And then nowadays there are zero, absolutely zero no-issue states, Illinois being the last holdout. So it's a pretty neat graphic. I'm going to put at least the first and last one up on my website, which is TriggerTalkRadio.com. But if I can get the motion one to go, I will do that, okay? Let's see. West Virginia just issued a new law. They are removing their sales tax on guns and ammo. In a time when places like California and other places are all trying to figure out how to put new taxes on. Like California just put a new $25 excise tax on each new gun sale, and they're still trying to determine how much they're going to do per bullet on ammunition sales. Here's West Virginia that's eliminating the sales tax on them, so that you got to laugh about that. Okay, the 80-pound president in the room, the frail little old man. One of the things, before we get into all the individual things, is he talked about this week that that there are no constitutional amendments that are absolute. Gee, what do you think about that? Okay, and that's, you know, well, you can't, he says things like, you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. Well, actually, that was debunked. There are times that you can do that, okay? But he went on and he said, from the very beginning, you couldn't own any weapon you wanted to with the Second Amendment. Okay, certain people weren't allowed to have weapons, and Biden argued that. So the idea is bizarre that suggests some of the things we're recommending is contrary to the Constitution. Gun violence in this country is an epidemic. Oh, you just have to call something an epidemic to take away somebody's constitutional rights? Oh, well, wait a minute. No, maybe not an epidemic. We could call it a pandemic and you could take away people's constitutional rights. But, you know, but so I guess if you're saying that there's nothing absolute about the amendments, I would disagree with a lot of that. Okay. I guess the Third Amendment, does that mean that we should all get prepared to quarter troops at our own expense? Okay, that'll cut down on Department of Defense spending, okay? The Fourth Amendment, who really needs a warrant anyway? You know, we don't need a warrant for that. So the 19th Amendment, oh, well, that's not absolute. I guess not all women should have the right to vote, okay? I guess those amendments aren't absolute, okay? And, oh, what's the other one? The 13th Amendment, that's not absolute then. So I guess the Democrats could go back to owning their slaves if they wanted to. They're the ones that always fought against it, okay? So I guess no amendments are absolute, Joe. Well, not really. The only one that's not absolute is the Second Amendment in the eyes of the Democrats. So, we'll get into that. We'll probably spend and I encourage you to vote or to call in and talk about it. Tell me what you think about what Joe said. We'll get into the specifics of it in the second section of the show here. Let's see. Portland's got a great new plan. Do you know how they voted to get rid of all their police, or a lot of their police? They removed $16 million from their budget this year. And you know what they were actually against? They were against, and they got rid of their gun violence unit. Okay. Well, guess what happened? Gun violence has gone through the roof. So now what they've done is that they've actually come back and said, well, we might have made a mistake. So what we're going to do is we're going to hire 24 unarmed park rangers, and they'll be the ones that'll go out and handle the gun violence stuff. I got to say, if I was an unarmed park ranger, and you remember that guy at the Parkland shooting down in Florida that sat out in his car and waited until everything calmed down? Well, I think that's what you're going to see, because you know what? The police officers, they run towards the problem. They are our heroes. They're the thin blue line, okay? But you know what? You send somebody out that's a counselor or a park ranger or somebody and they're not armed, and, oh, well, we've got a man with a gun locked up on the street and he is in a standoff. Oh, well, let's send Becky and Susan out there to talk him down, okay? No, that's not going to work. And I think it's showing up like that, even in like Minneapolis and other places where they're rethinking all of their budget cuts and dissolution of the anti-gun task force and all that kind of stuff. Matter of fact, but they are going to spend more money on anti-gun violence. So we'll talk about that too. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at WAM Talk 1600. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Wham! Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back. And during the break, a longtime listener, Bruce from Plymouth, called. And he wanted to know if I had any recommendations on COVID-safe gun ranges. And you know what? I've got to say, specifically, I only know of what's going on specifically at two. But in general, first of all, I would say that the outdoor gun ranges, and even the ones like where I shoot at Tri-County Sportsman's League, we've actually X'd out spaces in between shooting positions so that it increases the distance between people. And we changed some entrances and exits so that you didn't have to like squeeze behind somebody and get close to them to get to your shooting position. But in general, I would say the outdoor ones would be a good bet. But also, I know that Ann Arbor Arms had taken precautions like that, firing line. But here's the thing, too. An indoor gun range has, especially the newer ones, okay, have outstanding air handling, okay? And they have ventilators that pull the air away from the shooters so that the smoke and any lead smoke and stuff like that gets pulled away. So I want to say, if you are not vaccinated or not going to get vaccinated and stuff, but if you're concerned, you can wear your mask. I would say an outdoor one like Kensington and stuff like that or Tri-County and some of the other probably Washtenaw Sportsman's Club. Those all outdoor ranges, you've got a lot of ventilation and you're in good shape. The indoor ones, the newer ones especially, there's that one up in New Hudson, I think it is, that has outstanding ventilation. And I remember when they were building Ann Arbor Arms, what they had to go through for that. So I think that it's the least of your concerns these days that at the gun range that you would have a problem. So let's say I was also talking with Derek during the break, and I'm going to go down one of these rabbit holes for a little bit. I was going to, I asked him, I said, could I have said that word cat piss? He said, yeah, I think that would have been okay. I said cat urine or cat pee, but cat piss. Well, I got a quick story, and I got to tell you, it's been 40 years now, so I think I can tell this story. Many, many years ago in another life, two or three lives ago, I was the maintenance director for University of Michigan Flyers. There's a club out in Ann Arbor at the airport. I'm in my previous life, before I was engineering manager at Ford, I was an A&P mechanic and Part 135 maintenance director and IA and all that stuff in aviation. And so one time, this is I think it's a funny story. And as it relates to cat piss, it does. I was going down to visit my parents. And at that time, I was single at the time, and I had a cat, okay? And I wanted to go down for the weekend, and so I wanted to take my cat. And I borrowed a cat carrier. And it was an old cardboard cat carrier, kind of our pressed board. And it had seams in it, which the newer ones are plastic, and they don't. And they are, let's say, waterproof, if you get my drift. Well, this one had seams in it, okay? So we had a brand new airplane, 4-4 Echo Foxtrot. It was a Cessna Cutlass RG, which was like a Skyhawk, a 180 horse constant speed prop and retractable gear. Brand new airplane, really nice. And I took it down to my parents. And I was flying down, and the cat, you know, did not like being in the plane, cat carrier. So I'm flying down, and all of a sudden, I started to smell, you know what, cat piss, okay? Well, the worst part of it was that it leaked out of the cat carrier, which was seat belted in the rear seat, and it got into the seat cushions, okay? Well, I gotta say, I tried everything to get that smell out. And when I when I got back and I scrubbed it and cleaned it and deodorized it and all that and stuff, but for the next year, anytime somebody would fly that airplane, they'd go, they'd write up on the squawk sheet, has a funny smell to it. And I'd always say, I checked it. I couldn't find anything. So it's been 40 years now. Any of you guys that used to fly 4-4 Echo Foxtrot, now you know what that smell is, okay? Or was. So anyway, back here to Joe Biden. And so he decided that, gosh, there's a whole lot of things that they should do. He called for plans to reduce gun violence, okay? And he wants to close the background check system, the loopholes, and he wants to also the what he calls the boyfriend loophole or the stalking loophole. Everything is a loophole, okay, to them. Actually, if the law is written a certain way, that's what it is. It's not a loophole, okay? But the thing about the gun show loophole is that almost all the gun shows now, and I want to say there are some that are clubs like the Huron Gun Collectors and stuff like that, where the where an individual can, you know, have a table and they've got their five rifles out and they can sell a gun to a private individual. And me, and same thing, they actually call it a gun show loophole when like if I sell a gun to my neighbor, okay, or I buy one from my neighbor. Well, the thing is that's not a loophole. That's a private sale, and that's how the laws are written. And we've been like that for hundreds of years, okay? So it's not a loophole, but they call it that, okay? Then he wants to get rid of assault weapons and high-capacity mags and repealing gun manufacturers' immunity. So we'll get into these individually. And also talks about red flag laws and stuff like that. So he said, this is reading exactly, the Justice Department within 30 days will issue a proposed rule to stop the proliferation of ghost guns. And they get in and they go, oh, well, ghost guns, that's a commonly used term. Well, no, it's commonly used by the media, the anti-gun media. I don't know of any legitimate conservative media or gun talk kind of people, myself or other gun shows and things like that, that call them ghost guns. We call them 80% lowers or 80% receivers, okay? And so he wants to, he goes, we're experiencing a problem. Criminals are buying kits containing nearly all the components and finishing the firearms within as little as 30 minutes, using firearms to commit crimes. I got to say, I have heard of one crime where some guy used an 80% lower that they built. And it was a guy who bought it from somebody who did it and sold it, which was illegal. So there's already a law that says, you know, if you build a gun for yourself, which is not a loophole, it's the law, okay, if you build a gun for yourself, then you can't sell it. It's just that, for yourself. So he broke the law doing that. So we don't need another law to do that, okay? Let's see. The Justice Department, within 60 days, will propose a rule to make clear when a device marketed as a stabilizing brace, which effectively turns a pistol into a short-barreled rifle subject to the requirements of NFA. Okay, that's, I gotta say, There is the pistol, the short-barreled pistols, I mean the regular AR pistols, which are would have a buffer tube sticking out of the back. I talked to Theron about this on Thursday when I called in. There would be a buffer tube sticking out the back. So they put a brace on and actually got an ATF ruling that says, well, if it's a veteran or somebody who is single-armed, then they can still enjoy shooting and stuff like that by having this pistol brace that straps to your remaining arm, okay? Now, can people pull it up and maybe pull it against their shoulder? Well, potentially, but that's not what it's designed for. We got Tom from Detroit on the line with a comment about Joe Biden. Hi, Tom.
Hi, too bad we got to talk about Joe. I wanted to talk about the older powder, but I went to the range and did some tests. But, you know, a couple of things about Biden. You know, and he talks about this, oh, we can't have weapons of war. You know, I mean, that's a contradiction. Okay, for one thing, we're talking about militia is military in nature. You know, and you talk about weapons of war, that's military weapons. So what's he trying to say is we have military weapons because we have wars. We have wars because we live on a violent planet. And we have a militia because we live on a violent planet, you know, in our particular, you know, local areas, you know, the, you know, kind of bottoms up kind of a government rather than, you know, the dictator in chief out there telling everybody what he thinks they ought to do that day. Yeah. So that whole thing's a contradiction.
Well, go ahead. I want to say that's the same thing. There was a commentator on the, and I've got a story here. I forget his name, but he's a White House commentator. And he said, you know, we got to get rid of the weapons of war. When the Second Amendment was written, they were dumping powder down a tube and tamping it in. Well, do you know what? That was a weapon of war at the time. Actually, most of the, there's a meme that I've got. I've got it up on my website that says, stop calling my guns military grade guns. My guns are far better than military grade guns. So, and the same thing is true back in the old days of the Revolutionary War. A lot of times these, the militia and these individual owners who had their own firearms, they were of higher quality than what the military had.
Yeah, well, like, you know, there was the old Miller ruling, the Supreme Court ruling that said that, you know, to, in order to qualify as a militia weapon, it, you know, it really needed to have a military use. That's when they shot down the sawed-off shotguns. They said they weren't, you know, weren't useful as a military weapon. But yeah. Then there was, you know, then he's talking about, the gun show loophole. You were talking about that. You know, this is some kind of a power grab. They want to get jurisdiction over the private citizen. You know, the federal government doesn't have jurisdiction to make me register anything. Yeah, they got jurisdiction over their federal licensed dealers, and you know, because they got a contract. But now they're all of a sudden, because Joe thinks that, you know, there's too much gun violence, never mind all the other violence, all of a sudden he thinks he can, the federal government can just pass a law with no real constitutional authority over a private citizen.
Right. And we've seen a lot of Democratic governors doing that too, with a pandemic as a ruling, right?
Yeah, and you know, so then it seems like it takes forever to go through the courts. You got, you know, we got Heller and things like that. And then the states don't want to listen to it.
I want to say it is obviously a power grab. And when I talked to Theron on Thursday, I said, you know, just like it took a while that they have had a court ruling that overturned the bump stock ban, okay? But every one of these things will end up being appealed in the courts for 6 months or a year, you know, as long as they don't, like, as long as they don't say, well, yeah, but it can be in effect until we have this ruling and it goes through the courts, then it won't be anything but a bunch of fluff, basically.
Well, they can't say something that is unconstitutional is constitutional just because they say it is. Goes well, you know, unconstitutional laws purport to settle as if they never were.
They never existed.
Some of that old 8mm. I had 1951 head stamp on it, and I'm still getting the same 3,000 feet per second chronograph readings. That's out of a 29-inch barrel. Funny thing is, I shot some out of my 24-inch barrel, and I got like 2940. That powder in there is really fast. I don't know if you ever took one apart. I got 47 grains of that square kind of flake powder
I have not deconstructed any 8mm and looked at it. I may have to grab some and take a look. I did that recently on, I want to say like 50 rounds of 30-06 that somebody gave me that had old cast bullets in it. And I took it apart. And it had, I weighed the bullet, it was 184 grain bullet, and it had 51 grains of some powder in it. I have no idea what. And so I gave it to a friend who is deconstructing them and selling the brass. You know what I mean? Because I don't know. If it's a military round, it probably was loaded correctly. But if it was a hand load like that, I have no idea what powder somebody used or what amounts of powder and things like that. And even the weight of the bullet, unless you take it apart. And I thought, no, I'm not going to bother trying to shoot these. We'll just take them apart and melt it. He can melt the projectiles down and reuse them.
Well, I'm looking at the load data going in some of my old manuals, and it looks like that powder in that is like around 322 speed, but I don't know what it's supposed to be. It hasn't changed. Last time I chronographed it, it must have been 15 or 20 years ago, and it's still the same.
I expect it to be stable as long as it's not being stored in a moist area or in a extreme temperature changes and stuff like that. It's probably going to be fine. I have not seen anything unusual when I shot the Turkish 8mm Mauser ammo with the 1936 and 7 head stamps on it. So,
yeah, it's interesting. With that, I tell you, my shoulder gave out. I was shooting 30-06 and 8mm that day in bolt guns, and I'll tell you what, that with that fast powder and that lighter weight 24-inch barrel Mauser, that it got bad. I was scrunched over because I was kind of shooting on the bench and trying to chronograph and stuff. And
and when I shoot on the bench, I don't have the gun as tight in my shoulder as I do when I'm holding it. You know what I mean? And so if I'm trying to use sandbags on the forestock and sandbags on the buttstock, and then I with my left hand, I will squeeze the sandbag, you know, to raise or lower the sight. And when you shoot that, ouch, that is right into like your upper arm, you know?
Yeah, I know.
Yep. Hey, well, thanks for the call today, Tom. I appreciate it.
Thanks. Have a good one. Bye.
Yeah, bye. Oh, that's fun to hear about the old rounds, but he's got a lot of good points about, you know, I got an idea. Why don't they just make gun violence illegal? That'll do as much good as all of this stuff. He's got stopping the sale of ghost guns, new regulations for pistol stabilizing braces, encouraging red flag laws. Okay. Now, by the way, there are already laws out. By the way, if you are adjudicated as a person who might do harm to yourself or others, then you are prohibited from, you're a prohibited person. You are prohibited from buying a gun. So what's another thing going to do other than maybe have some, and we'll have this happen, where the guy down the street who's really anti-gun doesn't like the fact that you have guns, and he's mad because when you snowblowed, you blew a little into his yard, and he was upset with that. And he'll call in. He knows you got guns, so he's going to call and say, hey, this guy's crazy. He's out there waving a gun around. Boom. Okay? And they come and take everything, and you are you've got to spend a lot of time and money trying to get it back. Now, by the way, the other two of the things on this on these executive orders are federal studies on gun trafficking. For the first time in 20 years, the ATF and the Justice Department will be charged with issuing annual reports on gun trafficking. Okay. And investments in community violence intervention programs. You know, all these $2.9 trillion things that have $26 billion for people and the rest of it for a bunch of pork. Okay. What are you going to do to invest in community violence intervention programs? And by the way, these are in cities and communities where they're, you know, reducing their spending to their police. They're eliminating 50% of their police force and stuff like that. So what is a community violence intervention program going to be? Are we going to go out and talk to them? Oh, you guys, let's all sit around and say sing kumbaya and let's put the guns away. We don't need to have turf wars for your drugs and stuff like that. Can't we all just get along? Okay. Now that's what they're going to do, right? Now then he also goes out and appoints the guy, David Chipman, to lead the ATF, who is a super anti-gun guy, okay? He's one of the leading guys of the Giffords group, okay? You know, the Gabby Giffords and Mark Kelly, who, by the way, he's a retired astronaut, if you didn't know that. He was the head of that group, and now he's going to be the head of the ATF? Well, you can expect a lot of support from the ATF. By the way, 25 years ago, he happened to be one of the lead guys in the Branch Davidian Waco, Texas fire where all those people were killed and burnt. Oh, yeah, he's a great guy to lead that, okay? What did he say here? I'm looking. He said, let's see, Grandpa Joe. I like some of those public service things we're doing. But when he talks about... here we go. Joe couldn't leave the lectern without calling yet again for another assault weapons ban. There's no reason someone needs a weapon of war with 100 rounds, 100 bullets that can fire. No one needs that. Well, I don't know of anybody who, I got to say, you know, even I suppose somebody that has one of those twin 50-round drum mags might have 100 rounds. Are we talking three 30-round mags or... 10 round mags or what? I don't know, Joe, but I don't understand, you know, your point here. Okay. Then we get into the, he's talking Charleston loopholes and all that, but he goes, do you know, and this was a lie, that the gun industry is the only industry that can't be sued? Well, that's not true at all. They want to get rid of the Protection for Lawful Commerce and Arms Act, which is a thing that says that if a gun manufacturer sold a gun legally and it is used in a criminal act down the road, you can't sue the gun manufacturer. Now, you can sue the gun manufacturer if the gun has a defect, if it was sold illegally, if they were marketing it to children, you know, or something like that, and giving them away in the back of, matter of fact, I need to correct something. Sometime I'll do that on the Whammo Frisbee gun. But the thing is that there is no protection against a defect or other product liabilities. Why do you think there are gun recalls and stuff like that? Because they're trying to do it correctly. But it does say that you cannot sue a gun company for somebody who takes a gun that's 15 years old and been used lawfully for 15 years and then somebody steals it and goes and robs a bank. That's not the gun manufacturer's fault any more than it's Ford Motor Company's fault if a drunk driver hits somebody. Yeah, I know. It's pretty upsetting. And we'll see how this all doubles down. Biden doubles down on push to remove frivolous lawsuit protection. This is going to be in the courts for ages and ages. And that's why it's important that we got the Supreme Court that we did. I want to say, what are they talking now? Talking back in the court, starting a bit on that. So this is Dick Cupkey at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600. We'll talk about all this and more next week. See you then.